Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. Yes, I know it has been a while, and I haven't been producing an episode for personal reasons that I won't be able to get into, but I am back for the Sunday show in which I discuss what I think are some of the big issues of the week. And of course, over the course of this week, there has been no bigger issue than Elon Musk officially owns and controls Twitter, and the left is having a complete meltdown. And we know why the left is having a complete meltdown, because Elon Musk has promised that he was going to restore free speech to Twitter. And that's what the left hates most of all, free speech. Now, you can't have a true democracy without free speech. Free speech is the enemy of authoritarianism. And that's why the left hates the idea of free speech. It's why they've been doing everything they can to suppress free speech, because a democracy requires free speech, a well-informed citizenry, and free and fair election. And that is what the left has been attacking the most. Those three basic items that are a requirement, a necessity for a free people in a democracy. And you notice that they have been attacking the whole idea of bringing free speech back. Every time they say the words free speech, if you notice it in watching left-wing media, when they say the words free speech, they put in air quotes as if, no, this, you know, letting people freely say stuff is not free speech. They try to say that free speech is basically a code word for hate, intolerance, and disinformation. They're trying to get people to hate the very idea and concept of the First Amendment. But also take a look at what free speech would do. It would be a severe blow to the Democrats' ability to get elected, because it allows people to freely post information that debunks left-wing narrative. And the Democrats, they cannot get elected debating the issues, because they, one, can't debate because they've been suppressing debate and free speech for so long that they have forgotten how to debate. But two, take a look at their record. Every policy that they have pushed has failed. And everything that they try to claim in their speeches and their media posts, whatever, every outlet that will post whatever they say is easily debunkable. The only way they can get away with anything to get elected is by suppressing free speech and creating an illusion that people agree with them. And they have been doing that for a long time. Take a look at, you know, the way Twitter has operated, the way Facebook has operated. It's been all about suppressing free speech. And they tried justifying it by claiming that, no, it's not free speech we are suppressing. It's misinformation. It's hate speech that we are suppressing. Of course, they define hate speech and misinformation as anything that disagrees with the Democrats. And take a look at what they've been able to do with the censorship in order to try and maintain electability. Remember back in 2020, the Hunter Biden laptop story. They went out there and they classified that as Russian disinformation, misinformation, propaganda, they said, as justification for why they suppress news articles about the Hunter Biden laptop story. And anybody who had posted or said anything was banned, or more specifically, suspended, and wouldn't be allowed back on unless they deleted their tweet. And of course, we all know by now that the Hunter Biden laptop story wasn't Russian disinformation or a right-wing conspiracy theory. It was 100% true and factual. But then you take a look at misinformation that the Democrats produce, and it is amplified. They have turned the internet into the model in which you would implement the Orwellian society. And you take a look at some of the people that have been banned from Twitter or had their accounts suspended. And what was the crime? Just showing what the Democrats were saying. Think about the account Libs of TikTok. All that account does is just post what liberal left-wing activists are posting and saying online. I mean, these are things that the left are going out there freely posting for the entire world to see. And then Libs of TikTok just reposts it for people on Twitter to see what they're saying on TikTok. And somehow it is hate speech, or harassment to play unedited clips of Democrats and leftists talking. But also, let's take a look at what the internet used to allow, and that is to point out the complete and total hypocrisy of people by pulling up clips of them saying things that they are denying having ever said. How many times do you see where the Democrats go, well, I never said that. I never claimed this, that, or the other thing. And then people would post video after video of them saying the very thing or doing the very thing that they are currently denying having ever done. Free speech is powerful, and that's why the Democrats hate it. They've gone through to suppress any and all information that is negative about the Democrat Party, regardless of how true it is. Now, you're going off and saying, yeah, we know they unjustly banned some people, but there were still a lot of conservatives still left on Twitter. So it wasn't, you know, all that bad. It wasn't completely horrible. And I have two answers for that. And that is, one, if they banned all conservatives from Twitter, what would happen? Their ad revenues would severely drop. I mean, at least money is still a motivator to some degree. As long as people were able to get on and scroll through the feed, they would see the ads and Twitter would make money. Now, their feeds were curated and they were thinking, oh, wait, maybe we can change these conservatives' mind by only showing in their news feed liberal left-wing content. And if we can isolate the conservatives left on Twitter and make them feel like they are in the complete minority, maybe they would question themselves and switch ideas. You know, the power of peer pressure, of thinking, well, if I'm the only one in my views, then there must be something wrong with my views. But money and ad revenues was a reason why a large portion of conservatives were left on the platform. Of course, when you take a look at those left on the platform, they were mainly people who weren't content producers, but content consumers, who were consuming information but not producing a lot. Secondly, when you take a look at it, Twitter had to be able to maintain the pretense of being a platform. If they just said only Democrats allowed, you know, publicly, officially, then they would be outing themselves as a publisher, which would make them legally liable for every bit of content ever produced on their site, and they would be sued to oblivion. So they had to maintain the illusion that they are an open platform that people are freely and able to be a part of. But even at that, what would happen? Shadow banning. We all know shadow banning was happening, where if you were a conservative, people couldn't find you. If they tried looking you up, you didn't show up in the search result. And when you posted something, it would not be seen by other people. It would be unsearchable. Unless people already knew you and went directly to your specific URL, they would never see your content and they could never discover your content. So if you took them to court, they'd go, oh, look, we're letting them post. We're letting them post things. It's just the reason why they aren't growing in followers and why there's no interaction is because they're unpopular. And that was the third reason, which is basically an extension of the second reason, why not everybody was banned, because it would allow for propaganda purposes. So they could go off and shadow ban people, make sure that nothing they post would show up in anybody's news feed and wouldn't be discoverable under search. And then the Democrats could go out there and say, see, Republicans, they're unpopular. They, you know, we allow them on here. Sure, we don't like it, but we allow them on here because, quote, we're a platform. But no one's engaging with them. You know, they have very little responses, very little comments, very little social engagement. And look, they don't have very many followers. And if someone was starting to amass followers, what would happen? Twitter would go in and basically unsubscribe people from the conservatives' Twitter account. And of course, the people being unsubscribed from following you wouldn't know that they were unsubscribed unless, after not seeing a post for a very long time, they got curious, went back to your specific URL, assuming that they could re-find you. If they couldn't find you, they probably figured that you were banned or that you deleted your account and left. And if they could find you, whoa, they were surprised. Hey, look, you know, I was following this person and now I'm unsubscribed. Let me refollow. And so it was useful for propaganda purposes to allow some conservatives to remain on the platform, saying, hey, look, you know, after they've unsubscribed a bunch of people, they're losing followers. Hey, look, they have very low engagement. It was very powerful propaganda that they were able to use by allowing you on the platform, but not allowing anybody to see or interact with anything that you had posted. And they could just claim, well, the reason why is because those ideas are unpopular. And yet leftists would have people, boost their posts, and maybe Twitter would go in and subscribe people to a bunch of leftists to boost their count. Or, you know, the typical leftist tactic, they went on to some service and bought followers. They bought followers in order to make themselves look popular and look like an influencer. And because their content was all that could be discoverable, of course, it would be, you know, engaged with more, because you can't engage with stuff that you can't see. And that's why the left would get most of the engagement on Twitter. And it's not just Twitter. We know the same thing is happening on Facebook. We already know the same thing is happening on YouTube and in the Google search results, where they are going in and suppressing any and all conservative news and information that the Democrat deems inappropriate to their, are damaging, I should say, to their authoritarian goal, their great reset, which is to reset the world to the times of the privileged class and dictators and kings and only the top 1% having any say in any policy. So when you know what the Democrats have been doing and the purpose behind everything that they've been engaged in, then you understand why it is they are freaking out so much about the idea that Twitter, you know, which is one of their most popular platforms, you know, I believe they always tried to say Twitter was just right behind Facebook, although I question that. But, you know, they've been using Twitter now as a news source, you know, the public town square, they would say. So allowing free speech back onto the platform, allowing people to freely share ideas, debate ideas, and to also call out liars, hypocrites, which, you know, would define the Democrat Party, is hurtful to the Democrat Party, because it means that they may have to actually go through and think about debating ideas again. And they can't. They can't defend their record. And you're thinking, well, they still have Facebook, and Facebook is much bigger than Twitter. Yeah, but Facebook, you know, the one thing about them is that they are still greedy. Their algorithm shows that if you have, let's say, 100,000 subscribers, you're only going to get 3,000 of them to see any of your posts, right? Because of the way they go through and make you pay in order to reach more of your followers. So with Facebook, yes, that's still dominated mostly by the left, but they have to actually pay Facebook money to reach more of their followers, you know, to get from 3% to 5% by boosting, or to run targeted ads to promote their content in order to get people to see it. Facebook's very algorithm actually, you know, suppresses information that is produced or posted by content providers because, well, at least Mark Zuckerberg still finds greed a big motivator on his platform, which is still suppressing what the Democrats can post or how much propaganda can spread on Facebook. Although, you know, Facebook still, don't get me wrong, they target conservatives by suppressing their organic reach even more and charging, I would dare say, you know, they are likely charging conservatives more to reach the same percentage of their followers that Democrats can get through organic reach. So it's not like it's a level or fair playing field by any means. But you can see, you know, time and time again, how Twitter, you know, and how their newsfeed has always been more like a fire hose, where if someone subscribed to you, you know, they will see whatever you post as long as they scroll through long enough, depending on how many people that they are following. I mean, if they're following 1,000 people, it's still going to be hard for them to see your one individual post unless they were on there at a specific time. But Twitter was still the place where they could get all the free organic reach they could ever want without having to pay to reach more of their followers that they had to on Facebook. So Twitter was always more valuable to left-wing propaganda than Facebook. And people have caught on to Facebook, and what they do is they tend to mark their favorite Facebook pages and just go straight to those pages. It's a little more work, but at least you get the information and get to see what the people you're interested in or the news content that you're interested in and be able to actually see it. But if Elon Musk keeps his promise to bring in free speech, then the Democrats, they're screwed. Their ability to suppress news content and just claim it's disinformation has been severely damaged. They have taken a huge blow to it. Their ability to just post something or push a narrative without challenge has just been dealt a huge blow. Again, assuming Elon Musk actually goes through with his promise to restore free speech, because the Democrats have gotten so used to just pushing out whatever lie, and they've gotten to the point of Orwellianism, where they'll claim one thing one day, and then 3 weeks later, they'll claim the exact opposite and say that they never ever said what they originally said. And then the news media would go ahead and promote that. They would instantly start suppressing any old clips of what it is the Democrats are denying. I mean, you could take a million examples here and then start pushing the new narrative. Remember, as it became obvious that Joe Biden was suffering from mental decline, and the media would go out there and push the idea that No. It's not mental decline. He has a stutter. He's always had a stutter. And yet you could take a look at any old clip of Joe Biden and never once hear a stutter. You would never once see him drifting off like he is right now. But they would push that narrative. And then if people went to Twitter and showed Joe Biden from years ago, zero stutter and sharp, and then show him now as a frail old man who can't maintain a single coherent thought, if you tried posting that, well, that is ageism, that is somehow racism, that is hate speech or whatever, and then they would suppress it, deny it, and it would become hard to go through and find all of the evidence. Or when you take a look at how the Twitter and Facebook and the other social media companies handled the 2020 election compared to the 2016 election, when it came to the claims of election fraud. With the Democrats, they can push whatever false narrative. They can make whatever false claim without a single shred of evidence. But yet, when it came to 2020, despite there being a lot of evidence of irregularities, I believe is the euphemism we're supposed to use in order to downplay what we have seen evidence of actually happening, are pointing out how the Constitution says that the state legislatures determine all the election laws, the time, place, and manner, and that the election was conducted in violation of those laws. Well, that information was suppressed. And they said, well, that is hate speech. That is misinformation. That is incitement of violence. So they suppressed all of that so that people wouldn't become aware of the evidence and the data that has come about, and be passive, because it's hard to get angry about what you don't know. You're not going to take action if an authoritarian is unconstitutionally installed in the White House if you don't know that they were unconstitutionally installed. And so they used Twitter more than they used Facebook to not only suppress actual information that is damaging to the Democrats and their narrative, but they used it to overpromote misinformation that they themselves wanted to push. They had complete control. And then, of course, you get the whole issue with YouTube only allowing Democrats to really get much of any reach. Now, yes, there's a few conservatives out there that do, and some of them have been on there so long that, you know, people just go straight to their YouTube page, and even they have to monitor their speech. You know, hold back, find some pig Latin or euphemisms to try and get past the automatic censorship, which when you do that, it loses the impact of calling something what it truly is. And then I get it. You could say, Ben Shapiro, and let me make my thoughts very clear on that, about some conservatives that are still on these liberal propaganda echo chambers that call themselves platforms. You know, the conservatives that still have massive audience, don't get suspended, and are still able to get a lot of reach is because they're like the Matrix, right? It's a form of control. Remember, the whole point of the Matrix, the whole point of the One, Neo, was not ever to actually fulfill the prophecy of freeing people from the machines. It was a system of control that when the population of people that rejected the machine reached a certain level, they would be wiped out. The One would be, and their code would be reinstalled into the machine, reset, and start the cycle over. So when we go through and we see Ben Shapiro, who has been caught on hot mics before, you know, to cut out information or censor, you know, a live event that he had done, he had done so on a hot mic, you know, saying, oh, cut this out because, you know, we don't want to get banned. So they go through and they're allowed to operate so long as they follow simple rules of not being able to challenge certain narratives, certain ideas, right? And such as, for example, they're not allowed to challenge the Democrats' narrative of the 2020 election and so many other things. They are there as a system of control to give you the feeling that you have been heard, that your voice is being represented, and while at the same time, you are being told, do nothing. You know, just roll over and accept it. There's just another election around the corner. You know, so yes, you're right. You're being heard. Just don't do anything about it. And that is the role of people like Ben Shapiro, being propped up as a conservative leader, being allowed to actually exist on left-wing platforms and amass a big audience, so long as they follow whatever those platforms and leftists dictate is and is not off limits, and as long as their whole point of being allowed to exist on these platforms is to pacify Republican outrage over what the Democrats are doing. But the people who were just outright banned are people that were amassing a large audience and not playing by the Democrats' content rule, content filtering rule of what you are not allowed to challenge. And so if you bucked the system, if you did not go along with the censorship and you were amassing a large audience, regardless of the censorship that they were trying to put in place, you got through the censorship, then they outright banned you. And that's how the Democrats maintained control. And it was to show a signal to everybody else, hey, if you manage to get past the censorship and start amassing a large audience and you do not obey our censorship rules, you know, of what you're allowed to talk about, you will be banned, and your business of podcasting, your website business, your merch site will be severely affected and damaged by you being booted off of this. So, hey, we'll allow you to say a few items that we'll pre-approve that of what you're allowed to disagree with and allow you to build a business as long as you don't do anything that would actually be affected. And that's how I view people like Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire. They're just there being allowed to make a bunch of money, you know, and, you know, they will go through and be very effective about the things that they are allowed to disagree with. But by and large, they just bow down to the leftist censorship. Their whole point is to pacify you. Now, I went into that long rant to point out that if Elon Musk goes through and keeps his promise of allowing free speech, what happens? That changes the entire game. If people aren't being shadow banned and they're being discovered, they could start amassing an audience. And the propaganda of, oh, they don't have very many followers, starts to lose its effectiveness when they're allowed to actually gain followers. The propaganda that, oh, conservative content is just unpopular, that's why people don't engage with it, well, that goes away when people are actually allowed to see what conservatives are posting and be able to engage with it. And it allows, you know, under free speech, if Elon Musk goes through with this, for conservative views, which actually are vastly more popular than liberal views, to actually shine, to actually be able to allow people to see that, no, actually, it's liberal views that are in the minority. It's just one of the things that we see when you do polling, you know, door-to-door knocking, and, you know, you don't, you know, exactly state what your political affiliation is, and you just start asking people, hey, what do you think about this, you know, idea? What do you think about that idea? People, by and large, agree with the conservative viewpoint when they're not informed up front that it's conservative. Or my favorite is when you see those videos of people going off and, you know, repeating quotes, but misattributing them to the other political party. And what they had found is when they quoted, say, what Donald Trump said or policies that Donald Trump was promoting, but actually said it was being promoted by the Democrats, all leftists loved it. They thought it was a great idea, made a bunch of sense, and then were horrified when it was revealed, actually, that was Donald Trump that said that. And then they would say, quote, or, you know, provide quotes that Democrats had said, and then said it was from Donald Trump. And of course, the leftists would go out there and say, oh, yeah, that's horrible, that's racist. And then they find out that it was the Democrats who said that. And see, those videos are very powerful. In fact, that technique is very powerful for people after they made their answer and given their thoughts to find out it was actually the other side who said that, you know, to re-examine what it is they, you know, what they've been told to believe. And those videos going online is very powerful. I don't know if you've seen all that. And I know I'm going off on a bit of a rant and a tangent, but just think about the left's reaction, how scared they are about the idea and concept of free speech, because they are authoritarians and free speech is the enemy of authoritarians. And that's why they are so pissed off that Elon Musk actually got away with buying Twitter and that their censorship control may be going away. Now, of course, the left is saying, oh, they're going to leave Twitter. They're going to go off to this new so-called platform. I forget what it's called. It's like tribal or something, in which they upfront say, oh, they're going to go off and do hate speech. Suppress hate speech and intolerance, which, by the way, lets you know that right off the bat, they're not a platform. They are a publisher, and you're only allowed to publish left-wing content. You know, it's an echo chamber, and even though they're upfront about being an echo chamber, you know, they're still trying to, you know, I guess they're upfront about being an echo chamber while at the same time letting you know that, you know, are trying to suppress the fact that they're an echo chamber by claiming to be a platform. I'm not sure if I said that right, but, you know, they're got people saying that. Now, will leftists actually leave Twitter? Probably not. For the same reason why there were a lot of conservatives that still, you know, post stuff on Twitter themselves. The switching cost is hard. I mean, think about it as, you know, Gab, Parler, Getter, and others that have popped up as an alternative to Twitter. Well, of course, you know, you had the media attack them as, you know, white supremacist hate sites and so forth, just trying to keep people from going off. And if you were, you know, staying away from, you know, those alternatives just because you didn't want to be associated with radical white supremacist groups, you fell for the leftist propaganda. But I would say more to the point why conservatives had kept on Twitter is because it's hard to switch. It's hard to switch, especially when you have numerous options. The more options you have, the harder it is to switch, because you have all of these followers on Twitter that you could potentially reach. because you had built them up over the years before there was an alternative. And then you find out that, okay, Twitter is suppressing everything. Where do you go? You have 4 or 5 choices. You don't know which of those choices your audience that you had on Twitter are migrating to, you know, or in order to reach the same amount of people, you have to sign up on 3-4 different sites, which makes it harder to be able to go through and maintain, at least in theory. I mean, you'd figure someone would have came up with a program that can, you know, like Hootsuite or a Buffer, where they could just post once and it would distribute to all the platforms. You think that would be the easiest part, but I guess it's hard to maintain the comment section and interaction. But the good news is, from, you know, the conservative side, yes, we have some successes, but not, you know, as successful as getting everybody to go over. And the people who have signed up on those platforms still maintain a Twitter account to some extent, you know, and that is because audience, you know, potential audience. Even though my view is, yeah, you could post on Twitter and hope that people are able to see your content, you know, and, you know, maybe reach a few people, or maybe you'll, you know, finally get through, you know, to a leftist and, you know, point out to them how wrong they are. Sure. But switching is hard when, after you've amassed so much audience on a platform. And I don't know, even though you're not really reaching that audience because it's all being suppressed, you can see the subscriber count and see that, oh, I have the potential to reach this many people. So will the left actually leave Twitter when most of their success, you know, our claimed success, you know, if you're a journalist and so forth, has been the result of Twitter? I doubt that they will actually leave. Sure, they'll create another account and I know on, say, Tribal or something, but they're still going to be on Twitter, just like conservatives. And I would say that's a good thing, because as long as Twitter is free speech and liberals, you know, still use Twitter, well, it allows us to finally compete fairly on the platform, and we can start reaching those liberals. And we can start saying, hey, in the free debate of ideas, you know, and if we get into a debate with them on Twitter, we might be able to open their eyes. And they can also start seeing the complete and total hypocrisy and Orwellian censorship that the Democrats have engaged in, and maybe open a few of their eyes. See, conservatives don't demonize free speech. We love free speech because it's how we can open up eyes. It's how we can get people to see truth, fact, what's really happening, rather than the propaganda echo chambers that the Democrats are currently stuck in. Now, unfortunately, because of things that have gone on, you know, some of the legal battles and, you know, Elon Musk buying Twitter, you know, it wasn't soon enough for the election. You know, if he hadn't gone through with the lawsuits, maybe trying to back out of the deal, you know, he could have completed this purchase much earlier in the year and have been a major player in getting truth and information out in this election cycle, and been able to maybe have turned, you know, the red wave into a red tsunami or whatever you want to call it. It may have been, you know, possible to get near supermajorities in both the House and the Senate if free speech was already brought back months ago. So people could see what was really going on, what the Democrats were really doing. But here's another thing that you take a look at. Elon Musk, ownership of Twitter, may prevent certain things. Yes, well, I guess instead of saying certain things, could prevent the Democrats and their control of government from ordering Twitter to suppress information. Remember, Twitter suppressed the Biden laptop story because the FBI and members of the intelligence community came out and said, oh, no, this is Russian disinformation. You need to suppress this. You can't let the public hear this. It could affect the outcome of the election. Well, yeah, it would have affected the outcome of the election, but it wasn't Russian disinformation. It was honest truth. Imagine that. People actually knowing the truth may vote differently. And that, I think that right there really gets to the heart of why the left is freaking out over Elon Musk buying Twitter. But you also see here in a news article from the Daily Wire. I know, I bash the Daily Wire, but they do sometimes produce some good and revealing content, even though it's just only designed to let you know you're being heard and then tell you not to do anything about it. But FBI whistleblower leaks documents to Project Veritas showing agency allegedly labeling misinformation under election crime. Now, think about that. Now, first off, there are jokes people have been posting election after election, such as, remember, Republicans vote on Tuesday, Democrats vote on Wednesday, ha ha ha. And, or you can vote by text. You know, all of these jokes that everyone know is obvious, you know, joke and not real. But the bigger thing is when the FBI wants to say misinformation under election crimes, they do not have a very good track record of determining what is and isn't misinformation. It was members of the FBI that labeled the Hunter Biden laptop story as Russian disinformation, while having previously taken Russian disinformation paid for by the Democrats to initiate and justify a fraudulent investigation into President Trump. And if you notice, a lot of what the left deems as misinformation, right-wing conspiracy theories, all turn out, or by and large, the vast majority turn out to be true. And so will the FBI be able to go to Elon Musk and say, we want you to censor this information because we are deeming it misinformation? Will Elon Musk comply? That remains to be seen. But now they're trying to go off and label misinformation under election crime. This is kind of like the same as the Department of Justice going off and declaring that parents going to school board meetings to voice their disagreement with school policies and what they are putting in the classroom as terrorists, as terrorism, that it's a crime to speak out against the school board at a public school board meeting. And they're trying to go off and say election crime. Misinformation under election crime. Now, I wonder how they're getting away with that under the First Amendment. The First Amendment allows us to speak any opinion that we have or voice any disagreement that we have regarding our elected officials, our government. You see how the corruption of the FBI has gotten out of control because people were not aware of what the FBI was doing because information was suppressed. So them trying to go off and claim misinformation under election crimes, one, their track record of deeming what is and isn't misinformation is horrible. In fact, they tend to be wrong almost all the time. And how you can declare it election crimes for people to post their thoughts, opinions, and views about candidates and elections, and how they can prosecute that as a crime since we have the First Amendment of the Constitution is unclear. But the one thing that we have learned from the January 6th committee is whether or not you committed a crime doesn't matter because we have a two-tiered justice system. Because most of these crimes are, most of what they're alleging to be crimes, will be prosecuted in Washington, D.C. And what we know about Washington, D.C. is it's almost exclusively left-wing. So it doesn't matter if what you did is not a crime, in fact, perfectly legal, you will still be found guilty in a D.C. court because you have a two-tiered justice system where if you're conservative, you're going to be found guilty even though they can't actually find a crime. You know, they'll go off and just allege something that is not a crime to be a crime. We found that out with the January 6th. You know, the claims of trespassing, even though it was public property, you know, the people's house, people were going in where their elected representatives are. And oh yeah, by the way, they were invited in. But even all of that, there was claims of trespassing. And then without any shred of evidence that the people that they are prosecuting had actually engaged in any destruction of property, they would still be prosecuted. Now, what has been censored on Twitter, Facebook, and the internet is how much Antifa was at January 6th, dressed as Trump supporters, and how a lot of the actions that we saw indicate that it was a false flag operation. So the FBI wants to basically outlaw the First Amendment and claim it's an election crime to speak out. And they feel like they're going to be able to get away with it because we have a two-tiered justice system. And if they prosecute it in a DC court, they're going to win. All they need to do is say you're conservative and the jury will vote guilty. Which on the flip side of that, we can see that with the Democrats, when they get, you know, caught up in a prosecution like what we have seen with Durham, all they have to do is, you know, and state that they are a Democrat, and the jury will see that all the crimes that were committed were designed to take down President Trump and remove him from office to overthrow President Trump and the legitimate government of the United States. And the leftist jury will go, oh, well, it may have been a crime what he did, but we agree with the cause and purpose. Innocent. You know, we're going to let him go. So there are a lot more things that need to be addressed in this country. You know, we not only need, once the election's over, if we, God hoping, that we get supermajorities in both the House and Senate, we need to address a lot of things. We need to address that internet, social media, search engines, and all forth to make it a crime for them to engage in political bias and censorship. You know, that basically, if it's not illegal, you cannot censor, suppress, or treat it any differently than any other content, right? That should be the basic rule. But also to get on to these payment processors, such as PayPal and what is it, Patreon and so forth, and even banks now who have decided, hey, you know, if we don't like you exercising your free speech, what you may be doing is, you know, perfectly legal, but it violates our terms of service. It doesn't matter that what you are doing was conducted on a different platform, you know, and that you weren't using our sites to do what you were doing, but we disagree with your public speech, so we're deplatforming you on these payment processors. We're canceling your bank account. We are canceling your ability to use our service to process payment. And they could try and say, well, you violated our terms of service. Well, we weren't even on your site when we were doing this. We were using a different site. So now they have gone through the banks and the payment processors have claimed the authority that their terms of service reach beyond their site and their platform, but basically follows your conduct on any other site, any other platform. And if they don't like what you're saying, they basically destroy you financially, you know. And so that needs to be addressed by the Republicans if they take control, you know, by a large enough amount to get to override a presidential veto. And so we need to get out and we need to vote in such large numbers that we get enough Republicans that we can override any presidential veto and start implementing real, meaningful reform. And if Twitter allows free speech again, that fight becomes that much easier for us to win because we can actually get the ideas out there. And so after the election, right, regardless of whether we get supermajorities or just a thin majority, we all need to be writing our elected members of Congress, and you know, whether we comment at them on social media, write them letters, call their office, whatever. We need to organize a pressure campaign on the Republicans to actually produce these legislation, even if it's not going to get through a presidential veto. That doesn't matter. Just having them write and vote on it will energize the base and make 2024 a massive landslide as well. You know, when the Republicans start going through and addressing the issue, we'll be able to get bigger turnout saying, hey, if it's not illegal, they can't suppress what you post on social media. Will energize the base. saying, hey, it is a crime for you to cancel payment processing services or bank accounts because you don't like what they say when they're exercising their First Amendment. You know, basically saying the law should say that if you're engaged in politically motivated financial deplatforming, that's a crime. We need to start getting the legislation out there and voted on so people can see it. Even a vote that you know would end up being vetoed can be very energizing to the base of the party. And they need to make it clear that they hear us, they understand us, and that they are going to address the issue. And yes, if all they managed to do was just stop and block all leftist legislation and agenda, I mean, yes, that in itself is a great victory. You know, being able to go through and stop the Democrats from destroying the country even further. But being able to go through and show how they're going to reverse the damage that the Democrats have done to this country would be very energizing, especially if they were to go through and target education reform and address, hey, it is a federal crime for schools to lie to parents, hide from parents, or in any way try to deceive parents about what is being taught or pushed in the public school, or what they are doing with their children in the public school. That would also be a huge piece of legislation that would be massively energizing to the Republican base. And you would see all types of people. I mean, you could see right now with the Hispanic vote, you know, a large percentage of the Hispanics are abandoning the Democrat Party, you know, because they have seen what the Democrat Party truly is for the first time, you know, that some of the censorship, you know, has been able to be bypassed because of alternative sites like Parler and Getter and such. And so they're hearing for the first time the other side and going, hey, wait a minute, you know, the Democrats are batshit crazy. This other side that I'm told was racist and hateful, they actually sound pretty grounded in reality. And they're not the racists that we've been told in these echo chambers that they are. And you see huge swaths of the black community also switching party affiliations, in large part thanks to Trump, and seeing what it was like under Trump and seeing what it's like under the Democrats and going, oh, wait a minute. So we were, you know, the black community was suffering under Obama, prospering under Trump, and suffering again under Biden. And a lot of them have been able to escape the echo chambers, the propaganda echo chambers, for the first time. And those that have are abandoning the Democrat Party. And that's another reason why the Democrats are pissed that Elon Musk was able to buy Twitter. Because the free exchange of information and ideas mean that they're the people that they have been dependent upon to maintain the slight advantage in the election will ultimately abandon the Democrat Party if they have access to truthful information. The more people are easily able to share ideas, debate ideas, and by the way, post what Democrats have actually said in the past versus what they claim to have said, opens up eyes and minority groups, you know, whether that be the black community, the Hispanic community, the Asian community. And by the way, I hate having to say that, you know, black community, Hispanic, Asian. Why are we going through this list as if these communities are any different than the general community? There should only be one community, the American community, that encompasses all races. The fact that we are segregating, you know, black community, Hispanic community, really kind of goes off and shows how much the Democrats have segregated the population with identity politics. But in any event, based off of the leftist classification of community, free speech opens up eyes, and opening eyes gets people to vote different. As the Democrats' whole plan was by being able to control what you're allowed to see and read, what you're allowed to know, what you're allowed to say, was them being able to control your mind, being able to control your vote, and so forth. And they are losing that control. And the more people can see the actual truth, the more they change how they vote. And that's what the Democrats are really scared of. All right. So that's it for this episode. That really went on a lot longer than I had thought or planned that it would go. I didn't even get to much of the other stuff, like the State Department doubling down on spending $20,000 of taxpayer money to fund drag shows in Ecuador. Now, I know if you comment about this, the left is going to say, oh, you're transphobe, you're homophobic, or whatever. And here's what free speech allows as a reply to that. Why is it that we are spending $20,000 to fund drag shows in Ecuador while our own people are suffering financially from an economic crisis, right? And then have them try and explain how asking that question, why are we funding other countries' drag shows while our own people are suffering economically during an economic crisis? Our own people are suffering financially. You know, people are finding it harder just to make ends meet, just to pay their mortgage or rent, put food on the table, and get to work. People are struggling across the board to be able to meet their very basic need. And yet the government is going off and sending $20,000 to another country to fund a drag show? Regardless of how you view drag shows, whether you're left or right, is that really the financial priority we should be promoting at this point? Or should we be promoting, hey, let's alleviate the financial suffering in our own country before we worry about drag shows in other countries? And other countries are suffering too. So even after we solve the financial crisis in our country, if we're going to fund anything in another country, it might be to meet people's basic food and shelter needs. So why are we wasting money on drag shows when there are much more and much bigger financial priorities? Asking that question can be very damaging and dangerous to the Democrats. All right. So there, I wanted to get on about how The View goes on yet another racist rant, but anybody who watches The View knows that they're basically a bunch of racists, as is most of the left-wing media. You know, and then whether it's The View, CNN, NBC, they can't get through a single segment without being open, staunch racist. All right, so that's it for this episode. I'd like to thank you so much for listening in, and I will be back again next week, or maybe sooner if something big happens. Until then, I would suggest testing out Twitter to see how much the commitment to free speech really is. Have a great week.